Early Selections, The Codex Affair. The Codex of Form Missive, by Richard Shelton, 1969. New to Arda 2, a.k.a. The Massive Missive Mistake. Chapter the First. Council of Dalinap Landu, 16 October, 1969. Dear Reverend Brothers and Sisters in the Mother, this constitutes my second missive to the Council. The first, which apparently did not reach very many of you, contained an announcement in my appointment as Archdruid, pro tempore, of Carlton, and an outline of some of my goals. This letter will serve as an announcement of my election as Archdruid by the Grove and as my first general report to the Council. Enclosed is a copy of the first proposed Codex of Form, and a commentary on it. As you can see, it is primarily the previous resolutions of the Council, together with regulations designed to improve communications. There are, however, three new major provisions. The creation of the Secretary to the Council, the provision for replacement of patriarchs, the interpretations regarding priestesses found in Article 3, Section 2, and Article 4, Sections 4 and 6. The commentary gives explanation and justification for most of the important measures that have no established precedent. I consider most of them fairly straightforward. The title indicates my attitude towards amendment. I expect to have to submit at least one more proposed version before putting it to a vote. Please respond. Chapter the Second. The Codex of Liturgy is not going well. I still need the consecration ceremonies for Orders 5 through 7, and urge the patriarchs concerned to forward these to me as soon as possible. I also lack the liturgy for Midwinters, Beltane, and Lunasa. Anyone is invited to try his hand at writing services for any or all three of these. Druidism at Carlton is still very much alive, thanks due in large part to Steve Savitsky's recruiting efforts last spring. The Beltane service was attended by no fewer than 31, though most of these did not customarily attend regular services. Attendance on Saturdays currently varies between 6 and 12, and we expect a large turnout for Samhain. We have three or four candidates for the priesthood, of whom two or three are now sophomores, so the Grove is not yet in danger of extinction. Chapter the Third. Other groves seem not to have fared so well. I have records of four groves besides Carlton. Those of Rapid City, South Dakota, Vermilion, South Dakota, Macajawan, Wisconsin, and the City of New York. All of these are mentioned in David Frankquist's report of April 20th, 1966, but aside from this, documentation is poor. I have no other reference to the Rapid City Grove at all, and only an announcement of the founding of the New York Grove. And while the founding of the University of South Dakota Drynemetum at Vermilion is well documented, the Grove seems to have vanished. The university knows nothing of the Druids, nor D. Wesley Hubbard, nor of Anne Ballouf. Similarly, I have lost all track of Leonard E. Helding, the only priest consecrated at Macajawan. To the best of my knowledge, none of these groves now has a Third Order priest in residence. In light of this, I must consider all of them currently inactive. Any information concerning any of them will be appreciated. A minor calamity transpired this summer. The college managed to lose one of my boxes in storage. It just happened to contain, 1, the mimeograph masters for the Chronicles, and, 2, most of the letterhead stationery. I am looking into various means of producing a new edition of the Chronicles, but doubt that such an edition will appear until midwinter. I don't know who had the stationery printed, who did the printing, or if another batch can be printed. Again, information would be appreciated. Please send me some indication that you received this. Yours in the Mother, Richard M. Shelton, Archdruid of Carlton. Editor's note. The following documents were subsequently withdrawn in great haste and embarrassment as a big mistake by Richard. It should in no way be considered official, binding, or inspired, nor should anything else in Arda, and is here for historical purposes and representative of the thinking of Richard Shelton at that time. After a difficult period of transferal of tradition in the 1967 to 1968 period, there are also several errors in the text. First proposed Codex of Form. Article 1. Documents. 1. The religious scriptures and basic law of the Reformed Druids of North America shall be collected in the Druid Chronicles, which shall include the Early Chronicles, the Book of the Law, the Book of Customs, the Latter Chronicles, and the Book of Meditations. 2. The official liturgy of the Reformed Druids of North America shall be collected in the Codex of Liturgy, which shall include liturgy for the common orders of worship, for the high orders of the feast days, for the high order of investiture, and for the high orders of consecration. 3. The procedural and organizational regulations of the Reformed Druids of North America beyond those of the Druid Chronicles shall be set forth in this Codex of Form. Article 2. Liturgy. 1. Any religious ceremony performed by a priest or priestess and utilizing the official liturgy adopted by the Council of Dalinap-Landu shall comprise an order of worship, of which there may be distinguished two types. 2. The common order of worship, for use at regular services, and 3. The high orders of worship, for use at services celebrating special religious events. 4. The high order of consecration, to each high order of priesthood, shall be presented by the first patriarch of that order to the Council of Dalinap-Landu, for approval and adoption as part of the Codex of Liturgy. 5. The order of worship may be celebrated by one who is a duly consecrated priest or priestess of the Third Order. The high order of consecration of any higher order of priesthood may be celebrated only by a priest or priestess of or unto that order. 6. The waters of sleep shall be used during Gevra and Arach, and the waters of life shall be reserved for Saura and Foar, except when they are needed for healing or for consecration. 7. Priests and priestesses of the Third Order shall wear the white ribbon during Gevra and Arach, and the red ribbon during Saura and Foar. But any priest or priestess consecrating the waters of life shall wear the red ribbon regardless of the season, and any priest or priestess consecrating the waters of sleep shall wear the white ribbon regardless of season. Article 3. The Council of Dalinap-Landu. 1. The highest authority of the Reformed Druids of North America shall be reserved to all duly consecrated priests and priestesses of the Third Order collectively in the Council of Dalinap-Landu. 2. Verses 13 through 15 of the 8th chapter of the Book of Customs shall be hereby interpreted to apply only to the 4th through 10th orders of priesthood. 3. The Archdruid of Carleton, whenever that office be occupied, shall serve as chairman of the council. The council may appoint one of its members as secretary to the council for a specified length of time, and whenever the office of Archdruid of Carleton be vacant, the secretary shall assume the responsibilities of that office. 4. The Archdruid of Carleton may grant to the secretary any of the responsibilities of the chairman normally reserved for the Archdruid. But these shall revert to the office of the Archdruid upon demand of the Archdruid or upon the election or appointment of a new Archdruid of Carleton. 5. The Archdruid of Carleton shall assume the responsibility of maintaining a record of the resolutions of the council and of submitting to the council a general report on the current state of the Reformed Druids of North America upon his retirement from office. 6. Each priest or priestess of the Third Order shall assume the responsibility of maintaining a current address on file with the Archdruid of Carleton. Article 4. High Orders. 1. The 4th through 10th orders shall comprise all high orders of the priesthood. The purpose of the high orders shall be to stimulate priests and priestesses to the Third Order to continued spiritual inquiry and to honor achievement rather than tenure. 2. All high orders shall be considered equal in rank and honor, and equal in the sense that none shall be considered prerequisite to the other, save only with regard to the election of the first patriarch of each order. 3. Any priest of a high order may consecrate priests or priestesses to that order, but no priest shall be so consecrated unless he be also a priest of the Third Order. 4. Any priestesses unto a high order, provided she also be a priestess of the Third Order, may consecrate priestesses to that high order, but no priestess shall be granted the right to consecrate priests to any high order. 5. Upon the consecration of a priest or priestess to a high order, The priest or priestess performing the ceremony shall also notify the patriarch of that order and the archdruid of Carleton, and both the patriarch and the archdruid shall return confirmation of the consecration. Until such confirmation can be received from the patriarch, the newly consecrated priest or priestess shall assume no rights or duties of that order, save only the right to the mark of the order. 6. The highest authority within each high order shall be its council, which shall include all priests of the order and over which the patriarch shall preside. A priestess unto the order, who is also a priestess of the third order, shall enjoy the same voice and vote as does a priest of that order. 7. The patriarch of each high order shall assume the responsibility of maintaining a record of the resolutions of the council of that order and of sending to the Archdruid of Carleton reports of all such resolutions. 8. A patriarch of any high order shall hold office until his death or resignation. Upon such death or resignation, the Archdruid of Carleton shall appoint a priest of the order concerned to direct that council's election of a new patriarch, who must be a priest of that order. 9. Each priest or priestess of or unto any high order shall assume the responsibility of maintaining a current address on file with the patriarch of that order. Article 5. Groves. 1. To establish a legally constituted grove, a priest or priestess of the third order must see that the following are fulfilled. A. That a constitution be adopted. B. That the offices of archdruid, preceptor, and server be filled by election, as directed in the book of the law, such election to be held at any time of year. C. That thereupon the Archdruid of Carleton be sent notification with a copy of the newly adopted constitution and a list of the newly elected officers. If he deem all in order, the Archdruid of Carleton shall then return written confirmation of the grove's establishment, which confirmation shall be included in the archives of both the Council of Dalinap Landu and of the New Grove. 2. All priests and priestesses of the Third Order shall be charged not to establish groves of a transitory nature. 3. Election of officers, except as noted in Section 1, must be held during the period of Foar as directed in the Book of the Law. Should it be necessary for an archdruid to resign his office before the election of a successor, he shall appoint as archdruid pro tempore a member of his grove, who is qualified to hold the office of archdruid and shall serve until the next election. An archdruid pro tempore shall assume all rights and duties of a duly elected archdruid. 4. A retiring archdruid shall notify the Archdruid of Carleton of the election or appointment of his successor, and the Archdruid of Carleton shall return confirmation of such election or appointment. 5. Should a retiring archdruid find no qualified member of the grove to fill his office, he shall notify the Archdruid of Carleton that he is leaving the office vacant and shall send him the archives of the grove. The Archdruid of Carleton shall thereupon declare that grove inactive. An inactive grove may be re-established as directed in Section 1, on which occasion the Archdruid shall return the archives of that grove to the new Archdruid. 6. Upon receiving confirmation of his election or appointment from the Archdruid of Carleton, the Archdruid of any legally constituted grove shall assume the right to consecrate priests and priestesses to the Third Order. Further, consecration of priests and priestesses to the Third Order shall be reserved exclusively to archdruids of legally constituted groves. 7. Immediately following the consecration of a priest or priestess to the Third Order, the archdruid performing the consecration shall so notify the Archdruid of Carleton, and the Archdruid of Carleton shall thereupon return confirmation of the consecration. Until such confirmation be received, the newly consecrated priest or priestess shall assume no right or duties of his order, save only the celebration of the common orders of worship and the rite of the mark of the order. 8. Each grove shall retain the right to organize itself in any way which will best serve its own need, so long as such organization does not violate the regulations herein set forth. Article 6. Vestments. 1. All druids, particularly priests and officers, shall be encouraged to wear robes. For since ancient times, the traditional sign of the druid has been the white robe. 2. A patriarch, and only a patriarch, may wear a black robe, in honor of the first patriarch. He may not, however, wear a black robe while wearing the mark of an additional high order of which he is not patriarch. 3. The mark of the third order shall be the red or white ribbon, to be worn as directed in Article 2. 4. The first patriarch of each high order shall establish, subject to the approval of the Council of Dalin at Blandu, the identifying mark of his order. 5. Each individual grove shall retain the right to establish any identifying marks for its officers as it sees fit, provided these do not conflict with marks adopted to identify any other order of the priesthood. 6. No druid may wear any established mark to which he has not the right. 7. No restrictions on vestment other than those herein noted are expressed or implied. Article 7. Missives. 1. The appended forms shall be the standard forms for reports, letters, and local constitutions. 2. The following shall be noted for purposes of dating. A. The first year of worship shall be considered to have begun on Samhain 1963. B. The Druid Day shall begin at the sundown immediately preceding the corresponding civil day. The Reply of David, by David Frankquist, 1969, new to Arda 2. Chapter the First. Council of Belenos and Dalin ap Blandu, 23 October, 1969. Dear Reverend Brother and the Mother, Mr. Shelton, I am aghast. When I first received your letter this summer, I ran to our Webster's Third in near panic. I must confess that the word codex was new to me, and I was afraid that you were actually going to try to codify something. I found, however, that the only applicable definition in current use was a collection of unbound sheets in manuscript, especially ancient mythological or historical annals. I couldn't think of a more constructive undertaking for an archdruid. I was most friendly toward the idea of a perhaps slightly more organized collection of druid memorabilia. Besides, there was your assurance that it is not my intention to inflict a strict procedural or liturgical code on the Reformed druids, as if you or anyone else could. However, I now cannot reconcile that statement with the official liturgy of the Reformed druids, or the procedural and organizational regulations of the Reformed druids. It does not matter how the sentences end. The phrases themselves are totally foreign to anything I ever knew of the Reformed Druids. There are some constructions in the proposed code which have a slightly druidic, ambiguous flavor. Any religious ceremony shall comprise. But I am not encouraged by the fact that I suspect that you did not intend them that way. Before I left Carlton, those of us who were around when this all started, I hesitate to say founders, often wondered aloud what would happen in the future to Reformed Druidism. Much of what was delightful about it was unsaid. There was a tone or mood to all the Druid proceedings. Everyone understood it fairly soon after becoming part of the movement. It didn't have to be explained. I fear, however, that during the discontinuities which the Druids at Carlton seem to have suffered in the last couple of years, of which I have only seen secondhand reports, there may have been a confusion of some of the more intangible values. I am therefore going to try to deal in some of the specifics which have gone unstated in the past, but which I now hope will clarify your original intentions. Naturally, what I say here is my own opinion only. I hope that it is also the opinion of my associates in the Mother. Chapter the Second. There is one thing in your codex about which I am in complete agreement. That is your interpretation of the role of priestesses. Your alternative system is probably closer to the actual practice in 1966, but we were then in a period of transition. A bit of historical background might be instructive here. When the RDNA was first formed, women's dormitory restrictions at Carlton were considerably more severe than now. It did not seem conceivable that a candidate for priestess would have the remotest opportunity to engage in a vigil. Consequently, an alternative path into the priesthood was established which did not require a vigil, and so that women would not be stuck at the Second Order. Unfortunately, some priests, particularly David H. Fisher, developed the opinion that priestesses were forever doomed to be second-class status. I am enclosing some correspondence from David on the subject. It is too bad that I did not retain copies of my letters to him, but I think that even one side of the conversation should be enough to convince you of the strong feelings involved on both sides. The result of all this controversy was a series of compromises and never any clear interpretation. Yours is perceptive and just. I do not, however, feel that the matter of priestesses should be put to a vote. The question which is now at stake is whether or not a priestess who has vigiled can vote in the Council of Dalin Ap Landu. Can they, then, vote on this question itself? Once that is decided, there is no need for a vote. My own position is that priestesses have always, by right, been members of the Council, and that the Council does not have the power to exclude anyone from its membership once admitted. Excommunication, anyone? I therefore recognize your interpretation as a decision from the chair, which is not subject to appeal. I will refuse to recognize any resolution of the council on which priestesses are not permitted to vote. Chapter the Third. There are not, and ought not to be, established religious scriptures and basic laws of Reformed Druidism. As far as I am concerned, the chronicles are not closed. Naturally, while I was typing all the stencils, I was in no mood to waste my time on anything which I did not feel was stylistically inappropriate. I would also warn anyone who wishes to add to them that if the additions are not consistent in the style with the rest, the whole may be damaged. I also reserve the right, as bearer of the title Chronicler, to consider apocryphal anything I don't like, but I see no reason for spelling out the contents of the Chronicles as if we were setting up some sort of holy canon. I am disturbed by all this confirming nonsense. You may feel that it will improve communication. It will not. It will only cause everyone to ignore the Archdruid of Carlton. It is red tape, pure and simple. As a veteran of 3 years in the army and currently a civil servant, I think I can speak with some knowledge on the subject of red tape, and I know it when I see it. Chapter the Fourth. The following points are worth keeping in mind. The only authority in any higher order is the Patriarch. It was never intended in any other way. He is the only one who can select new members of the order, and he must give his okay before the consecration, according to the intention of the resolution on 26 May 1964. The Patriarch alone decides the ceremonies for his order. He needs the approval of no one to establish the first one or to change it whenever it strikes his fancy. Whenever anyone is consecrated a priest, priestess, that's it, baby. There's no waiting in Reformed Druidism for the official shingle to arrive from the national office. Anyone who has made it through the all-night vigil has the right to be a priest then and there. By the way, just what are these rights and duties of the higher orders that aren't going to be assumed until national gives the okay? There was never intended to be any kind of official liturgy in Reformed Druidism. Only the ceremony for the Third Order is fixed, and that only for reasons of nostalgia and continuity in what is the most important office in Druidism. Besides, it does happen to be the one area which is the proper business of the Council of Dalin Ap Landu. Liturgy is used as a tongue-in-cheek subject heading for some of the resolutions of the Council, but it should be noted that they fall into the category of interpretations of existing customs. As far as the adoption of a basic order of worship, 7th May 1964, that is a foundation only, a basis and a starting point for infinite variations. I see no reason why there could not be ceremonies which could be performed by a second or even first order druid. David Fisher, in designing the original order, felt that any second order could offer up a sacrifice. The only customary restriction is that the waters of life could only be consecrated by a priest or priestess who is vigiled. Does one need a ribbon to consecrate waters? Chapter the Fifth. Don't flatter yourself with the thought of something we missed. It is perfectly clear from the Chronicles that each patriarch is elected by the council below. It says nothing about those verses applying only to the first patriarch of each order. You say that's awfully unwieldy? That's why we like it. While I'm on the subject of patriarchs again, although a formal vote was never taken, a majority of the Council of Dalin Ap Landu expressed their opinions in the fall of 1965, in response to a question from David Fisher, that resignation from the office of patriarch was impossible. Secretary of the Council? as in first secretary of the party, it would appear that the only use this thing could serve would be to allow someone who is really attached to Druidism to pick up the ball and run with it permanently. We don't need that. We left the chairmanship at Carlton so that it would see a constant turnover and, hopefully, constant injection of new spirit. Also, we felt that we could all maintain a continuing interest in Carlton for other obvious reasons, and that this would be the easiest way to maintain communications. If the interest dies out at Carlton, I'm sure the council can take care of itself, if it wants to. If not, what materials would be best turned over to someone to whom they would have a personal significance? I really don't see what's so bad about transitory groves. True, they are something of a pain in the neck for the Archdruid of Carlton, who is destined to never know what is going on. But I have a certain fondness for them. They're so spontaneous. Actually, you never know whether a grove is going to be permanent or not until a couple years after it's founded. Besides, since it takes a grove to consecrate more priests, we might miss consecrating someone in a transitory situation that might subsequently be in a position to star a really going concern. Elections can be held any time a local grove wants. Don't forget that the Book of the Law is only a translation of the Carlton Grove Constitution into King Jamesian, including the section on amendments. Chapter the 6th. I don't see the need for setting up a calendar of Druid years, especially since there is not evidence that the ancient Druids recognized a beginning and an end to the year. It is more likely that they viewed time as circular in nature. Whenever precision is necessary, a civil date is usually used. Whenever it is not, the year is seldom mentioned. And what's to prevent another grove from dating in terms of its own founding, or any other event for that matter? I'm surprised to find out these old standard formats for letters I wrote up are still in existence. Perhaps you would be interested in their origin? It is true that they do generally describe the style originated and popularized by David Fisher, but the details grew out of the fact that they were produced as a diversion while I was in my army clerk school. I was being pumped full of that junk 8 hours a day, and those formats are basically a parody of the Army Correspondence Manual. Chapter the 7th. By way of a summary, I should like to turn my attention to the very resolution of the Council which reserves authority to the Council. This resolution had two purposes. First, we were anticipating the possibility that it might someday become expedient to incorporate. Whenever that occurred, it was likely that one of the original members would be in a position to conduct the incorporation proceedings. We wished to agree before that time on the form the organization would take. The resolution had the effect of establishing a potential board of directors, if in name only. The legality of the resolution is highly questionable since it was paused by the council itself. However, it makes sense if you consider it in a negative way. That was the second purpose of the resolution, not to give authority to the council so much as to ensure that no one else exercised it, whether Archdruid, Patriarch, or Founding Father. I am enclosing an epistle from David Fisher, which he originally asked to have included in the Chronicles. I suppressed it partly because he had second thoughts about it after it was written, and partly because it exhibits the terrible tendency of those of us who founded to try to solidify those traditions for which we were responsible. We expected in a few years it would be impossible to muster a quorum in the council, and that therefore the creative originality of individual druids and archdruids, once the council was instituted, it became convenient, as long as it was still small, to use it as a means of expressing our opinions in a number of controversial questions, a means of recording our intentions for posterity. But the resolutions are just that, an expression of the resolve of the members of the council. Chapter the 8th. Now that I have made my tirade, it occurs to me that I may have misunderstood you completely, and that I am only furthering the cause of misunderstanding by attacking your codex so violently. It is possible that you intended it all as a parody of organization, but if that is the case, you might take my reaction as an indicator of your success. I suspect you were motivated primarily by a desire to bring a bit of organization to the Reformed Druids, but that's what it's all about. Reformed Druidism is a statement that religion has a tendency to become organized religion, which then becomes organization devoid of religion. It is difficult to tell until we have communicated more just what you are seeking for Druidism. In the meantime, I shall reserve my right as Patriarch of Belenos to withhold the ceremony for the Sixth Order from your proposed codex, as long as there is any implication that it is the business of the Council of Dalinep Landu or the Archdruid of Carlton's. If what you wish to do is collect the current customs and traditions of the Druids in topical form, then I will gladly assist you, so long as it is made clear that they represent only the present version of the constantly changing picture. I do not feel, however, that such a collection should be submitted to the Council for approval. It is worth noting that the Chronicles, the Order of Worship, and the various pamphlets were never submitted to the Council or anyone else for edit or imprimatur. Every Archdruid should feel free to develop whatever materials he needs to spread the word. In any case, if you do submit anything for a vote, you can count on a negative vote from me if it contains the word religious, a word found nowhere in the Chronicles. Official. Get your official Captain Midnight magic decoder ring. Regulation. 3 years in the army were enough to turn me against that one, or even shall, unless used in the first person. May the Carlton Grove grow in strength and awareness, and may those who sit on the Hill of Three Oaks find there a fresh breeze, blowing away stagnation and the petrification of religious forms. Yours in the Mother, David A. Franquist, Patriarch of Belenos, Archdruid Emeritus of Carlton. Reply of the Other David, by David Fisher, 1969, new to Arda 2. November 28th, 1969. Dear Richard, I am enclosing several Druid documents, including a form for the sealing to the Fourth Order. The badge of that order is a green glass chalice, which in my time could be purchased at the local Woolworths. I am also, as you will notice, appointing you Patriarch of the Fourth Order for the period of your Archdruidship. This has always seemed a sensible move to make, for it will permit an active and continuing membership in the Fourth Order. Since I have left Carlton, my Druidism has become pretty much an inactive affair. Mostly, I suspect, because of an increasing amount of certainty about my own Christian vocation. I still think Druidism served a useful purpose and will continue to do so. And I look forward with interest to further letters about the work. I shall only comment briefly on your proposed codex. It seems to me that although interesting, such a document does not represent the original intent of the founders of Druidism, among whom I was one. We never meant it to be an elaborate and highly developed religion. We only saw it as a means of holding the college's then-religious requirement up to ridicule. If they gave people credit for attending services, we would unmask ourselves as jesters. And if they withheld credit, they would be branded religious bigots. It was really David Franquist who began the serious work, although I had noted in my own sermons and meditations that Druidism did in fact seem to be helping some people along on their spiritual quest. If the Grove has continued, then I assume that is a sign of people's interest. But the original three founders, Norman Nelson, Howard Cherniak, and myself, never saw the Druids as a permanent feature of Carlton life. One minor note about vestments. Do you still wear the white alb, the red and green reversible garment, and carry the carven wooden staff which I wore? Or have you reverted to the white robe only and the red or white ribbon? This was made by a faithful Second Order Druid, and I bequeathed it to Franquist, who added the staff. By the way, the identifying mark of the Fourth Order ought to be a green silk ribbon. You are correct in your surmise about Samhain 1963, since that was the time when the Druids were born. But actual worship on the hill began the next spring. You ought, by the way, to have the Book of Faith among the council records. My one actual contribution to the official scripture. I would still stand by it, and if you have no copy, let me know and one will be sent. Yours in the Mother, David Fisher. P.S. There is no New York Grove so far as I know, and I have no plans to establish one in St. Louis. I may be able to revisit Carlton next year. If so, I would enjoy meeting the Druids and perhaps leading a service. Fisher's Farewell, by David Fisher, 1970, new to Arda 2. 13 April 1970. David, First Archdruid of Carlton, Patriarch of Granos, to the Reformed Druids of the Carlton Grove. Peace and greeting in the Mother. Brothers and sisters, I understand from Reverend Brother Shelton that certain aspects of the history of the Druids have been lost. To fill that lamentable gap, I am writing the following epistle. You should understand, first of all, that Jan Johnson, author in large part of the Chronicles because of the style he chose, had of necessity to alter a number of early events. David Frankwist, the second Archdruid, codified and printed the Chronicles and added much material, but Johnson is responsible for the main body of material. He was, or is, a Druid of the Second Order, and served at one time as preceptor. He chose not to fully record, in particular, the origin of the RDNA in full detail. Even the Chronicles cannot disguise that RDNA was at least in part understood as a protest movement against the then-religious attendance requirement at Carleton. The thought was that if no credit was extended, we would claim religious bigotry on the part of the administration. If it was extended, on the other hand, we could reveal the frivolous origin of the cult. For you must understand that whatever Frankwist made of it, Reformed Druidism was originally the product of an interest of mine in Celtic and Norse mythology, and of Norman Nelson and Howard Cherniak's interest in setting up a quasi-religious body. It began over a dinner table in April, and I held the first service on May Day. I never claimed any special consecration by a Druid in England, nor did I ever claim a vision or an inspiration. I simply proclaimed the glories of the Earth Mother and held services, constructed largely out of my imagination. You will not have any of my early meditations. They were never written down. Basically, they upheld a panentheism, a general admonition to practice inwardness, and were originally intended to simply be as general as possible without offending anyone. They only became more intense and serious when I discovered that some of the persons who had come to laugh had found real meaning in the service. Despite all of this, however, I think that it is to David Frankwist far more than any of the other three founders that you owe your continued existence. Howard Cherniak soon lost interest and drifted away, once the requirement was abolished. Norm Nelson was a great lover of ritual and form for itself, but he shared with me a worry lest Druidism become too serious. I do not know what his current attitudes are. For myself, I can only say that although I no longer hold services, nor am I involved in a grove, I consider myself to retain much of the spirit of the original movement. Druidism's open and flexible character is part of my own theological outlook, which I attempt to incorporate as a Christian theologian. I would not in principle object to holding a service if I were ever at Carleton, for example. It is simply that my spiritual needs are currently being met by something which seems to have more substance and more depth. Indeed, when Druidism began to get serious, Norman and I agreed that it would be well worth the trouble if the RDNA served as a way station for Homo Viator, a place to be used for a temporary refreshment and nourishment. Perhaps during years when alienation from more conventional forms of religion was greatest, but not as a final resting place. We would have been far more definite in formulating our tenets had we intended the RDNA to be a self-sufficient religion. The tenets, in fact, as embodied in the Constitution, are the only remaining contribution of Howard Cherniak, and may reflect his lawyer's desire to frame a deliberately flexible instrument. Some other marginal notes may be of interest. The higher orders were suggested by Norman Nelson, his love of ritual perhaps getting the better of him, and given their names by Frankwist. The reversible chasuble was made and designed by Barbara Beam, a Second Order Druid. The altar was built of discarded stones near the monument on Monument Hill, and torn down within a day of its building. There are other sidelights that I could add, but I think this forms the substance of what I had intended to say. If you have the time, I should appreciate hearing from as many of you who care to write to me as what the RDNA means to you. As founder, I feel a certain responsibility for all Druids, and your current ideas would greatly interest me. Finally, as Patriarch of Granos, let me mention that any of you who feel especially called to the work of healing, whether in a physical or other sense, and can journey to St. Louis, will, upon due thought, be welcomed by me to the Order of Granos. Blessing and peace, hope and joy from the Mother Earth, the ground of all life, be and remain with the Druids of the Grove of Carleton. David, Patriarch of Granos, 13 April, 1970. The Polite Refusal, by Richard Shelton, 1970, new to Arda 2, April 7th, 1970. Dear David, many thanks for your letter of 28 November and for the assorted documents enclosed therewith. Since overseas mail is not often returned if undeliverable, I had no idea whether my missives were getting through. But I see that the most important did. Please let me know whether the St. Louis address will be relatively permanent. I am returning the copy of the Fourth Order Consecration Service since I have what seems to be the original in the archives. I do not, however, have the Book of Faith, so the proffered copy will be welcome. The red and green reversible vestment is indeed still in use, although the staff apparently fell by the wayside some time ago. It would be an interesting custom to revive. Stephen Savitsky, 7th Archdruid, never one for ceremony, would throw the robe on over whatever he happened to have on at the moment, but I usually wear a white alb under it and have lately taken to wearing a cope-like robe under it. It is, unfortunately, a bit weak about the hems, and I argue with myself periodically whether I should tamper with such a relic and restitch them. Who, by the way, is the faithful Second Order Druid that created it? The Codex has not been received well. Looking at it now, I see that it is much too stringent, and, as Frankquist has suggested, it really doesn't accomplish what I had in mind, i.e., improvement of communication. Some of what has roused much ire was intended to do just that in order to ensure response. But most was due to the fact that a lot of tradition had not survived at Carlton. We suffered a break in the chain of Archdruids during which much was forgotten. At any rate, the Codex will be withdrawn. Though cognizant of the honor that you have done me, I must decline to patriarchate. My reasons are based on two traditions that are as absolute as anything in Reformed Druidism. One, that the patriarch of any given order is chosen by the council of the next lower order, and two, that within any high order the patriarch wields absolute authority. In light of two, I recognize your right to resign and will convey your resignation to the council if you so desire, although I would do so with great unwillingness, and would counsel you rather to maintain your well-deserved office and title. However, I cannot accept the patriarchate from any but the council. Similarly, I shall not claim Fourth Order priesthood unless I am actually consecrated to the order or am created patriarch by the council. There is a further difficulty in the implementation of your directive, and that is simply that, inasmuch as the patriarch holds absolute authority within his order, no human force except the patriarch himself can require that a patriarch resign. Steve has suggested the possibility of abolishing the patriarchate and attaching to the office of Archdruid of Carlton the position of pseudo-patriarch, with the desired properties, but I doubt that such a radical change is either necessary nor desirable. The principal difference between the current arrangement and your proposal, with the logical extension to the higher orders, is that the former forces priests of the higher orders to seek out new priests for elevation, while the latter makes the propagation of the order virtually automatic. Since the high orders are not yet in grave danger of dying out, the former seems preferable in that it requires more effort on the part of the older priests and that it encourages paths to cross more often than would otherwise be the case. And I think that druids are mobile enough to make the current arrangement work. Having said that, I hardly need add that should you be able to revisit Carlton, you would be more than welcome. Yours in the Mother, Richard Shelton, Archdruid of Carlton. Apology for Simplicity by David Fisher, 1970, new to Arda 2. Reformed Druids of North America, Patriarch of Granos, i.e. David Fisher to Shelton. Dear Reverend Brother and the Mother, I am sorry that you have misunderstood my proposals as reactionary in character, and as attempts to hinder Druidism. Accordingly, acting on your advice and counsel, I direct the following. 1. That my vote on priestesses remain the same, but my letter not be circulated or reasons given to the council. That proposals number 1, 4, and 5 be withdrawn. That proposals 2 and 3 be submitted with whatever explanation the Archdruid of Carlton sees fit to add. Believe me when I say that, far from being anti-feminine or attempting to impose a rigid dogma, I was merely attempting to return to the original, simple spirit of Druidism. Analyzing the movement historically, I can see that I was responsible for many of the trends towards more complicated organization and ritual, as well as a more clearly developed theology, leading to what seems to be an invalid assumption on the part of some druids that druidism is a religion and a valid substitute for it. I feel that Druidism is not a religion, nor was ever intended to be by the founders, Norman Nelson, Howard Cherniak, and myself. Now I see my attempt to interject meaning into the services in the middle of my first year as Archdruid as a mistake. For while some meaning was necessary, it has been carried, I fell out of all proportion. The original spirit vitiating Druidism was as fresh and as simple as the winds blowing over Monument Hill. There was a spicy irreverence not uncommon to Carlton, which I could not appreciate, but see now as a healthy balance. In my proposals, I was but attempting, perhaps clumsily, to maintain some sort of guidance by the founders and original Druids on the organization, which is, after all, our proximate, if not ultimate, responsibility. As you well know from my widely varying letters, I have been worried at times over what I have done. At times I have been moved to consider resigning my orders. Now, however, I see my duty as remaining and advising. If you wish to add priestesses, by all means do so, for my feeling is really tied to a desire to keep the organization simple. I must insist, however, that proposals 2 and 3 are vital if those who begin the work of the Earth Mother are to be kept in touch with new developments. The Reformed Druid has always boasted of its democratic ways, and I do not wish to impose control. But to advise is, I think, a minimal right which I maintain. My sincere apologies for any disturbance this may have caused, and my best wishes for you personally next year in graduate school. Yours in the Mother, David Fisher, Archdruid of New York Elect, Patriarch of Granos. The Report of Richard, by Richard Shelton, 1970, new to Arda 2. Council of Dalinep Landu, 8 April, 1970. Dear Reverend Brothers and Sisters in the Mother, it is my pleasure to convey to the Council Robert Larson's announcement of the founding of the Berkeley Grove of the RDNA, and of his election as its Archdruid. This grove, to my knowledge, is the only active grove besides the Carlton Grove. Its advent is most welcome. New priests and available publications follow. The Codex of Form has not been received well. One reason for this is undoubtedly that my reconstruction of original practices from the tantalizingly incomplete archives were wide off their mark. But the paramount reason lies simply in the conception that the Codex is a codex, i.e., as a codification of material included therein. I have been convinced, several times over, that such a great degree of regulation is not only unnecessary, but also distinctly detrimental, and would only be ignored. Acceding, therefore, to the principle of the lack of rigid structure is one of the greatest assets of Druidism. I hereby withdraw the Codex from the consideration of the Council. Neither do I intend to develop a Codex of Liturgy, inasmuch as I myself would feel unnecessarily fettered by a fixed liturgy. On the other hand, a collection of tradition and of liturgy to be observed at the priest's discretion would be useful in the administration of a grove or mission. Further, it is my firm conviction that candidates for the priesthood should be thoroughly schooled in the history and traditions of the Reform, and such a collection would expedite matters considerably. It is this, then, that I shall direct my efforts. Finally, I direct your attention to the enclosed proposal concerning priestesses. The proposal, submitted by Robert Larson and myself, seeks to abolish the restrictions that relegate priestesses to what Mr. Larson has called second-class druidship. These restrictions, which have no foundations in the basic tenets, are difficult to justify and have left the priestesses in a rather ambiguous position. This we have tried to remedy. As to some of the specific provisions of the proposal, Mr. Larson writes the following. Women, Danu bless them, have been causing men problems since the first. It's time to resolve the situation of priestesses. As you are probably aware, the hours problem is not met with in most places, and I am sure that we can rise above our male chauvinism and accord them an equal place with priests if they want it. This proposal would also enable them to refuse equality if they wish, and leave room for consecration of a priestess unto a higher order without a vigil where problems are met. However, she could not be a third order without a vigil, nor could she perform the sacred worship, but only the duties of the order unto which she has been given until such time as she shall take the vigil if it is for her wish to become a third order druid. You will note that this rather wordy proposal maintains the special place that women have among us while training them to first-class druidship. Maintaining their special place by allowing them to be consecrated to a higher order without being a third order, it nonetheless encourages the vigiling and preserves the decision-making area of the Council of Dalinep Landu to those who have earned it by vigiling upon the bosom of the Earth Mother, and have her find them worthy. As chairman of the council, I have the responsibility of maintaining the legality of its resolutions lest any of the future resolutions be jeopardized. Therefore, since the council has operated under the directive in Customs 813 since its constitution, and since the council has never formally granted priestesses of the Third Order any voice or vote in the council, I must request that the priestesses refrain from casting ballots. Further, if the resolution is not passed, I cannot allow the priestesses to vote on any subsequent proposal until such privileges are granted them by the council. With that, I shall close, asking you to indicate your vote in the enclosed card. Yours in the Mother, Richard M. Shelton, Archdruid of Carlton. Note: the vote did pass unanimously among priests and priestesses who voted, and was the last to do so. See Records of the Council of Dalinep Landu in Part 4 of Arda. The Discourse of Thomas the Fool, by Thomas McCausland, 1970. Carlton Apocrypha only. Invocation. O Granos, hallow this thy essence by thy renewing power and by the way of the many yet one paths. Cleanse us, purify us. Remind us that this thy essence is also ours, and as thou art many yet one, so too are we. Show us thy all-penetrating wisdom, and prepare us to receive thee as fully as thou hast received us. Text. I am the wind which breathes upon the sea. I am the wave of the ocean. I am the murmur of the willows. I am the ox of the seven combats. I am the vulture upon the rocks. I am a beam of the sun. I am the fairest of plants. I am a wild boar in valor. I am a salmon in the water. I am a lake on the plain. I am a word of knowledge. I am the point of the lance in battle. I am the god who created in the head the fire. Who is it who throws light into the meeting on the mountain? Who announces the ages of the moon? Who teaches the place where couches the sun, if not I? Discourse. Often it is that the archdruids do read this ancient mystery. It is indeed one of the greatest treasures we know, for it came verily from the ancient sage druids who pleasured the earth in younger times. But who among you have verily heard this ancient mystery? Oft it seems that these lines refer to the All-Mother, for she is truly all of these and more. But what is the mystery there? Not mystery, but shining fact. No, the mystery is not the Mother, nor is it Baal, for this mystery is even more secret than he, though he knows and speaks it. Verily, I am that mystery, not the Mother, not Baal, but I. How is it that I came to be all these things? I am the god who created in the head the fire. It is there. Look and understand. Who else could it be if not I? Now there may be some among you who would agree and would say that this was so. For ultimately, Baal and I are one. How deceived they are. While I am, Baal is not, and there is no touching of these two. No, not oneness, for Baal is not to have oneness with. Baal is not. Understand this. It is only delusion which lends you to believe in him and the Mother. Verily, a poor hoax it is. Now listen carefully so you can understand. Baal is not. For he is invented by man. He was invented to give man the freedom to relax in man's creation. If Baal is great, how much greater is man, the creator of Baal? Nothing more than the highest spirit of man is Baal. And though that seems most wondrous, it is but a poor hoax. Baal is not great, for he needs existence and non-existence. He is all and nothing. Can one be great and still be so dependent on such limited realms? No, Baal, though he is more than you or I can comprehend, is very powerless. He who created the universe cares not for all and nothing. They are nothing to him. He is so beyond that even all the words of knowledge said at one time would change him not a drop. Baal is merely the half-drop that almost changed. Great it is to be one with Baal, but to be one with him is not great at all. If not I, is the water not great because it flows and trickles and dances? In other words, because it is water? No, water is not great. It is merely water. He is not great. I am not great. He and I are one. But hear the greatest mystery. He is all of me, but I am not all of him. And yet, by being merely a drop of him, I am all of him. Understand this. Now you understand the words of power. Be the lake and the plain. Be the ox and the boar. Throw light upon the mountain, if not I. The Wisdom of Thomas the Fool by Thomas McCausland, 1970. Carlton Apocrypha only. Chapter the First. Listen, my brethren, and I will tell you the great secret of Druidism. This I tell in order to assure the pure transmission of Druidism for all time. Many of you there are who have the spirit of the mother burning brightly inside of you, and yet, lacking a priest, must let this fire die. Hear and understand. Here is the great wisdom known to all the druids of old. Here is the one wisdom you must grasp if you would stay on the bosom of the Earth Mother forever. Chapter the Second. The great secret of Druidism is this. All the powers of the Mother are yours if you but learn your true name. Even if you are but of the First Order, no secret shall be hidden once you learn this great secret. The way is hard. The three ways of day and the one of night must be traveled. The wisdom of the waters of life must be heard. What are these three ways of day? The way of the rising sun, the way of the setting sun, the way of the sun at zenith. What is the wisdom of the waters of life? The wisdom of ice, the wisdom of steam, the wisdom of water. Yet it is not in the three ways of day that your true name dwells, nor in the wisdom of the waters of life. Neither is your name of the mother or of Baal. It is of them both, and of them not at all. Your true name is in the way of darkness. Yet it is not of darkness, nor was it of darkness born, nor shall it die of darkness. Though Baal is born of darkness and dies in darkness, your true name knows darkness not at all. Your true name will be heard upon the bosom of the mother, yet she hears it not, for it is not her name. Your name, when it is truly heard, will rock Baal from his slumber and cause rain to fall in the center of a stone. To hear your name, hear the mother. To hear your name, hear her not. This is the most powerful secret of Baal. It is the most powerful secret in all the realm of the four ways and the seven powers and the 13-fold mystery. It is the word which makes of all ends a beginning. Only this is necessary. Know your true name. All else is but the dreams of sand. Chapter the third. But how do we know that true names exist? Listen and understand. When we consecrate the waters, we do not say, O great and glorious grove, thou of power deep-rooted in the mother, thou of power sky-rending, thou of power to block the sun and rain, consecrate these waters. Nor do we say, O healing waters, consecrate this thyself by thy powers of all-pervading wisdom. Nor yet, O power of the most secret essence of the vine, hallow this. Nor even, mighty swirling ocean, pounding the mother, as mighty and as vast as even she is, hallow this drop of thee. We do not say, O great light which rends the sky in storm, hallow this as thou dost hallow the rain by the great leveling fire. Nor, O greatest powers we see, mighty sun, hallow this which thou didst bring into being. Nor do we say, O gentle stream, by thy joyous power, hallow this thy essence. Nor even, O great mysterious life, hallow this the essence of all life. Verily, all this is great wisdom, and I did tell you that this wisdom consecrates not even the water of man's dreams. But if one says, Dalanap Landu, with the knowledge of the power of it, truly the whole universe will be forever consecrated. Understand the 13-fold mystery, and then understand how much more powerful is the knowledge of your true name than the knowledge of the names of the mother. Your name will consecrate even Baal. Brethren, hear your name. Listen every moment, for the wind and the waters and all that dwell upon the earth mother speak all the names that are. Only by continual vigilance will ye hear your name when it is spoken. Baal knows your name. The mother knows your name. The patriarchs know your name. And ye with every breath speak your name. Listen and understand. Your every breath speaks your name. Great is this secret. I pay for the carrying of it with my very life. Hear and understand. Listen always, for the mother will speak your name the moment before it is expected. Only by constant vigilance will ye be prepared. Chapter the fourth. I pray that the mother will act kindly towards one such as I, who must tell these lies to those who would truly seek her. The wise will hear me not. The dull will hear me not. Only those who vigil will hear me. And maybe even they will not hear. For the sake of purity, I tell these lies. May the Earth Mother forgive such a fool as I, who would have men chasing the belay of trees. This is my folly, Thomas the Fool, August 25th, 1970. Peace to those who dwell in the Mother.